Muhib Nabulsi, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Free Palestine, a Disability Day special for 3CR. So I'm Pauline Vituna, 3CR's Disability Day Worker for 2021. I'm a Gunantuna person. My people are indigenous to Papua New Guinea. And I'm also a migrant settler living on the land of the Bunurong people of the Kulin Nation. My family moved to Nam when I was a baby. I identify as queer. I have multiple disabilities, both visible and invisible, acquired through illness, violence, and the medical system. My relation to Muhib is that we met through the Disability Justice Network, which is a collective of multiply marginalized disabled people who've come together to care for each other and explore what disability justice means on these stolen lands that we live on. I'm going to hand it over to my guests now to introduce themselves.
Thanks, Pauline. Hi, everyone. My name is Muhib Nabulsi. My pronouns are he or they. I'm a queer disabled diaspora Palestinian, currently living on occupied Turrbal and Yagara country in Mianjin. I'm also a migrant settler and came to so-called Australia as a baby with my family who were economic migrants. As Pauline said, we know each other through the DJN, the Disability Justice Network, and recently, I've been involved with the campaign directed at Melbourne Queer Film Festival regarding them screening Israeli films that receive Israeli state funding. Thanks for having me today, Pauline. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to people about this topic and about solidarity on Disability Day. Very happy to be here.
I thought we could start by giving listeners an overview of the fight for Palestine.
So a brief kind of overview of the Palestinian struggle for people who may not know much about it. One place from which to start is the late 19th century, when the first immigration of European Jews to Palestine begins. And at this point, it was not the Zionist project had not yet taken hold. And I will try not to go too deep into history here. And then over the kind of following decades, this immigration ramps up and up. And in the early 20th century, with, you know, the rise of Nazi Germany and anti-Semitism in Europe had been longstanding for thousands of years. That's when kind of Zionism as a political ideology comes about, and supported by various European colonial powers, the Zionist project, which was stated by many involved at the highest levels as an explicitly colonial project that sought to displace the indigenous people. That's when that kind of began. Indigenous Palestinians had obviously lived there for many millennia. And those indigenous people are, you know, a mix of all the different cultures that passed through that part of the region. And the Zionist project sought to displace those people and create a Jewish state in its place that very explicitly excluded the indigenous population. And this kind of comes to its zenith in 1948, after the British colonial powers were occupying Palestine at the time. And then due to, you know, the Holocaust and atrocities committed against Jewish people across Europe and Russia, the UN eventually supported the foundation of a Jewish state on Palestinian land. And then what ensued was, in 1948, what Palestinians call al-Nakba, which translates roughly to the catastrophe. Zionist militia kind of forced, there were many massacres committed against Palestinians, and hundreds of thousands of others were forced from their land and home to neighboring countries or to parts of what is now called the West Bank or Gaza. And the Palestinian struggle for liberation was kind of framed for a long time, even before the foundation of the State of Israel, was framed as an Arab nationalist struggle. And it was within this rubric that it continued to be framed until, still to some degree in the 60s, but with the rise of the PLO and its constituent organizations, it also became kind of enmeshed in broader third world struggles, anti-colonial struggles, such as those that were happening at that time across Africa and Asia. And so there's been, I think, we can go, there are so many details, it's hard, it's really hard to cover it all, but I guess those are the foundation. Recently, though, there's seen a bit of a shift in the way that, you know, myself as a Palestinian and other Palestinians who I organize with and am in community with kind of think about Palestinian liberation, which is no longer, you know, definitely no longer an Arab nationalist, doesn't have that kind of agenda, which for many, many reasons, and nor is it kind of tied to, you know, this notion of third world anti-colonial struggle, which was very much in that kind of mid 20th century conceived of as kind of European colonialism that weren't necessarily settler colonies. So kind of the viewing Palestine and the state of Israel's establishment and the Zionist project as a whole as a settler colony, a project of settler colonialism, invites a kind of, you know, it kind of works against Palestine's status as a kind of symbolic exception, and instead allows us to see the similarities between the occupation of Palestinian land and the occupation of the land of First Nations peoples here in so-called Australia or in Turtle Island, aka so-called US, and other settler colonies, of course. And so this really helps, and this is an ongoing process, but it's really kind of refashioned how we think about Palestinian liberation, which now, you know, and also living on stolen land myself, someone else's stolen land, and much of the Palestinian diaspora is in other settler colonies. So it really completely reconfigures how we think about it as a global movement. And part of that is the necessity to struggle against settler colonialism in all settler colonies. And this means, you know, building, contributing to the struggles of First Nations wherever we might be. I say we as like diaspora Palestinians. Yeah, I think that's a decent overview. I mean, I'm sure I missed some important things, but yeah.
No, that's fantastic. And you've helped make a few things clearer to me as well. So it has been a conscious shift towards building solidarity with other liberation movements in settler colonies.
Yeah, I think it has very much been intentional. And, you know, because when it comes down to it, the nation states that support the State of Israel and lend it its human rights abuses and colonial occupation legitimacy are those other settler states. And so it's, and that's why it's so important, right? By struggling against, contributing to the struggle against settler colonialism here, it's inherently linked to Palestine. And there are myriad historical examples of, you know, like very material links of these settler colonies supporting each other in their respective settler colonial projects. And the similarities are astounding, whether it's in terms of like the rhetoric of people in government in these nation states, or the kinds of legislation, borrowing legislation from each other, which has happened historically a lot. But it very much is an intentional shift that moves away from, exceptionalizing Palestine.
So, you mentioned at the beginning that you have been involved recently in protest actions against the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. Could you tell us about what happened, how the controversy came about, how you became involved, and why you became involved?
Yeah, definitely. So I became involved in this campaign earlier this year. There was a kind of MQFF with a reduced program to make up for the fact that a festival couldn't take place in 2020. It was called MQFF Together. And I had actually seen, living in Mianjin, I had seen the Brisbane Queer Film Festival's program in March or late February. And, you know, had seen that there weren't any films from Africa or the Swana region. For those that don't know, Swana is an acronym that stands for Southwest Asia and North Africa, which is intended to replace the colonial term, the Middle East. So I saw there were no films from these regions on the program. And I also saw that they were screening a film by the Israeli director, Eitan Fox, whose films are held up in a lot of academic literature on what is known as pinkwashing as emblematic of that phenomenon. So after that, I had also seen that this MQFF Together festival had announced its program. And so I looked that up. And then I found that they also, no films from Africa or the Swana region, and also were screening this Eitan Fox film, but on top of that were hosting a whole retrospective on Eitan Fox. And in response to this, I wrote emails to both festivals. You know, there were lengthy emails in which I explained how I found their programming to be ethically objectionable, and also kind of, you know, gave them reasons as to how and why that's harmful, both to queer people in Palestine and the broader Swana region and Africa as well, but also how it's harmful to queer folks from those diasporas here. And I kind of implored them to issue a public statement about the lack of films from those regions and kind of recognize that it's a problem, at the least, and also to cancel the screening of the Eitan Fox films. I didn't expect MQFF to cancel those screenings, to be honest, particularly because they were having a whole retrospective. But I thought I had a better chance with BQFF, but both festivals in their responses kind of dismissed my concerns and got quite defensive about the lack of films from those regions. My arguments about pinkwashing were dismissed as personal opinion, essentially. And yeah, both festivals gave, their festivals are very different sizes, so they gave different, but similar in ways, excuses for the lack of films from Africa or the Swana region. But in both cases, it was very apparent in those responses that they weren't concerned with this. And, you know, I had originally emailed as an individual. It wasn't a collective email. It wasn't an email from an organization. It was just me from my personal email. And then, so in response to this, I organized a counter screening of Dean Spade's film, Pinkwashing Exposed, in Mianjin. And then I reached out to friends in Nam, who then kind of, you know, took on that it was going to be impossible for me to kind of be central to the organizing of campaign against MQFF, given that I'm based in Mianjin. And they kind of took that on and organized a counter screening of the same film in Nam. Yeah, then those friends recently, when MQFF announced their program for the full festival, kind of, you know, jumped into action and restarted the campaign. Well, it didn't really ever end, but continued the campaign. This time, it's gained a lot of traction. So two board members have resigned. I don't know the current stat on how many filmmakers have pulled their films, but it's more than 10 at this point, including one feature film. The rest are shorts. They've pulled their films in solidarity. Various other, Mali Pride, which is a LGBTQIA plus community organization in the Mildura region, canceled. They were kind of co-hosting some screenings there with MQFF, and they canceled those in solidarity. Numerous volunteers quit in solidarity. And there's been, in response to that, there's been a lot of media attention. Thanks to like the social media campaign, essentially, you know, there's been several articles now, a few news pieces, a few opinion pieces by people in the movement. Yeah, now it's kind of a question of how we continue with this campaign, because it's not something that's going to end now. You know, it's almost just getting started. Yeah.
Yes. And the tactic of a boycott too. Obviously, cultural boycotts are part of the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, or BDS. So I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about what that is, what BDS is, and the purpose of cultural boycotts, why this tactic is employed.
Yeah, that's a great question, Pauline. I probably should have mentioned our kind of demands in that just before, but I got caught up in the chronology. So basically what we are asking for is, once again, with this recent campaign, we asked them to cancel the screening of Israeli film The Swimmer, which received its funding in part from the Israeli Film Fund. And we asked for them to adopt a BDS policy, well, a policy of cultural boycott towards Israeli cultural products. So BDS, Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, is a movement led by Palestinians in Palestine through the National Committee there. It aims to use kind of those three tactics, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, in order to put economic pressure and other forms of pressure on the State of Israel, with the goal of it adhering to international human rights law and, you know, the various UN resolutions that it on a daily basis goes against, not to mention all the everyday colonial violence that the Israeli state inflicts upon Palestinians. And BDS came about just over 15 years ago and was inspired by the same kind of tactics used by anti-apartheid activists in South Africa. It's a kind of a call from Palestinian civil society, not from, you know, the PA, the Palestinian Authority. And that's what kind of lends it its power. It's what Palestinians in Palestine want me and my friends as diaspora Palestinians to do to support their cause. It's directed by Palestinians in Palestine, which is very important. So often in regards to Palestine, best courses of action are often dictated outside of Palestine, are often dictated by non-Palestinians. And so BDS is led by Palestinians in Palestine and calls for these kind of methods of protest. They're methods of nonviolent protest, essentially, boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And there are, you know, it's a call not just to organizations such as MQFF to employ cultural boycotts, but it's directed at individuals, small organizations, larger organizations, all the way up to kind of the state and supra state level. I think actually I might add, regarding the cultural boycott specifically, in relation to MQFF, Israel in the last kind of 10 years or so started to implement a global marketing strategy, which goes by the name of Brand Israel, in order to basically improve the perception of Israel throughout the world. This came about after, you know, several Israeli assaults on Palestinian life in Gaza, when Israeli government officials and kind of elites saw Israel's reputation start to take a dive internationally. And this was led, it was created in conjunction with a bunch of American advertising executives. And one of the kind of main ways that the Brand Israel campaign has sought to improve Israel's image and therefore paper over and try and cover up the myriad Israeli human rights abuses is through cultural products, particularly film festivals. And LGBTQIA plus film festivals were targeted in particular. They weren't even a, you know, small proportional part of a larger plan, but they were very particular targets. And part of this Brand Israel campaign sought to kind of position Israel as a international gay tourist destination. And, you know, some of the marketing materials are just absurd. And the way in which they try and portray Israel as this, you know, queer-friendly oasis in the kind of barbaric Middle East. That's an essential part of the campaign. It's not just to say, come to Israel, it's so queer-friendly here, but it's also to say that in comparison to the neighboring Arab countries and to Palestine and Palestinians, first and foremost, that they are, you know, employing age-old racialized stereotypes of Arabs as inherently backward, inherently homophobic. The cultural boycott is particularly powerful in this sense, because given that this strategy with the Brand Israel campaign rests so much on cultural products, such as films, it's integral that we kind of push institutions like Melbourne Queer Film Festival to adopt a policy of cultural boycott. Yeah, I hope that makes sense.
That absolutely makes sense. And that's really interesting what you said about Brand Israel and how pinkwashing is a deliberate and central part of the strategy to wash over the brutal human rights abuses the state of Israel is committing against Palestinians. It really makes clear why cultural boycotts are so essential to BDS. I wanted to ask you now about solidarity actions that disabled people can participate in. As I mentioned earlier, I met you through the Disability Justice Network, and we issued as a collective a statement of solidarity and published it in the Overland Journal. As we were writing that statement, I was thinking a lot about conversations that I've had with fellow disabled people about tangible solidarity actions. So many multiply marginalized members of our community are poor, or we face access barriers literally everywhere and have very restricted ability to move and be a part of the activities people typically think of when they think of political protest. So I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on how non-Palestinian disabled people can be in solidarity with Palestinians, and in particular with Palestinians with disabilities.
Yeah, that's such a good question. Firstly, I think an important thing to emphasize with BDS is that, you know, the B of BDS, boycott, the call to boycott, for example, companies that do business in the Israeli settlements in the West Bank, is not to say, I mean, there are so many companies that do business there that, you know, BDS is not saying, oh, you can't buy any of these products from any of these companies. That's not really how BDS works. BDS works through kind of targeted campaigns. So it targets the most high profile of these companies, a few of them, and spreads awareness about that. It's not seen as you know, there are graphics that circulate of, you know, it's a page on which there are 100 logos of all the companies that are complicit in these settlements that are illegal according to international law. And they're like very overwhelming, these graphics. But the thing is, it's not, BDS is really not asking. And as organizers involved with it, we don't ask for people to boycott all those products. That would be unreasonable, especially as you mentioned, you know, sometimes the products from these companies might be the only ones that someone can afford, or, you know, for whatever reason, people might need these things, which is 100% legitimate. But there are so many ways that people can get involved, particularly disabled folks who, you know, might not be able to go to protests or in-person, whatever kind of in-person event. In fact, if anything, this campaign, MQFF campaign, has demonstrated how essential social media is in these campaigns, and is something that if they have, you know, a smartphone, any person can engage with from home. And the impact of that really, I don't think, can be underestimated. I think it was after, what was it? Was it an outage, an Instagram outage or something a couple of months ago? Or yeah, a Facebook and Instagram outage, after which Tori, who we both know also through the DJN, made a great post in which they said, you know, all the rhetoric that was circulating about, oh, like, we don't need these apps, we should just go outside, we should just meet. Basically, Tori just highlighted the ableism inherent to such statements. And I think that, yeah, if anything, this campaign has shown us how powerful social media is in that regard. I mean, several of the journalists who have approached me and other organizers to cover this have said that they were following it on Instagram first. I think it's worth mentioning here too, something I kind of had in mind before we started chatting. I really want to encourage people to push against this notion that Palestine is this like one very specific cause that, you know, Palestinians should, it's hard to explain, that like Palestinians have proprietorship over or something, which, you know, at some level is, of course, I think any kind of movement for Palestine should be led by Palestinians, just as any movement for disabled folks should be led by disabled folks. But through kind of this one phenomenon of pinkwashing, we can see how Palestine relates to other struggles, in that when organizations like MQFF pinkwash or are complicit in Israeli pinkwashing, pinkwashing isn't just restricted to Israel. It's something that happens everywhere and is part of kind of something that the scholar Jaspir Pua calls homo nationalism, which is basically, in essence, the process by which kind of queer liberation discourses are co-opted by the nation state and then serve the capitalist nation state's imperial purposes. And what they end up doing is, in co-opting this discourse, it's then repurposed to give, for the most part, like cis, white, gay men access to citizenship in that nation state in a way that was denied to them before. But in offering that citizenship to them, it's denied to other people. It can only be offered to, extended to them, because it's denied to multiply marginalized queer folks. Yes, I think I'll stop there.
That was my final question. So I want to say thank you for joining me today and for sharing your knowledge with our disabled community. Now, if people want to follow you, where can they find you?
If people want to follow me, they can find me on Instagram at HJEEBI. And thank you so much for having me, Pauline. And I also want to thank all my multiply marginalized disabled comrades who have shown so much support throughout this campaign, and not just this campaign, you know, also the statement that you mentioned before in solidarity with Palestine that the DJN published in Overland earlier this year that you are an integral part of, Pauline. That thank you obviously extends to you as well. Thanks for inviting me on the show today.
And we're going to end the show with a couple of tracks. Muhibi is going to introduce them.
Muqata'a makes experimental electronic dance music using synthesizers, drum machines, old Arabic records, and field recordings that he takes of the soundscapes of occupation, recording in particular at checkpoints. Dabour is a rapper from Sheikh Jarrah who rose to prominence with a track about his neighborhood released earlier this year. Shab Jadid is the MC from renowned Palestinian rap crew Blatanem.
صوتنا سوليد وشيل حط كله طرح بمكانه. اهدى ما هو كل شي باين في المحنة الله بيشهد مين احنا رجالة ضمن طرطش لك بنضرب حرب الليلة ما بنغلب بدك جبال وعادي من هدلك مرحب فيك في ولاد القدس من دبر حالنا نحل اللغز رنات على نفحة وكل بخش وقت شفنا وياما وكل بصف ولا مرة نخاف ولا مرة ونص بدك بركان بنفقع بوف نعمل لك حفلة تخش تنط نستقطب مال بس بدنا نقص ما هو كله عارف ما هو كله شايف ما هو كله خايف والدنيا ترص استجدع دايما ووعك بوحش انا ادرينالين فاجع بشباب ينضرب بالغاز احنا الجدعان مش زي نجلير رد بالك عم تعيشها بلاش سوي واعمل واجمع كاش ما الدنيا صعيبة وبتهزل سيبك من روح واحضر لك جاي انا قرش انا قرش انا قرش انا سمكة وصحابي ملان في الجلمة نشنع نعمل غلبة تجينا يا خالي بناخد العتبة تخوف بالليل ندوي لك عتمة بس شوف تنساش انا زي الناوس لح فتك في بغز رجال تحفر انفاق ترجع بشوال وملان اشلاق بلاجين 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 بالجدعان انا فاتح دكان من بيع شلسات والدم مسموح بس للاسباع مكتوب على القرمة قسم لو غاد احنا جن بنطلع ما بتشوفناش ودموع ما تسيل اذا فش مسيل نحن الشجعان ان قد انا اوانو بوم بخ وطني بيعم زينو كيف بس عرصوت نسولاد وشال حط